Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
And yes, I did just open up the first take of the show with a big-ass word. Juxtaposition. There is quite a juxtaposition going on right now. Sorry about that, Hawk. Sorry about that, the rest of you. Sorry to start the day with a big-ass word. But that's exactly what there is. A juxtaposition. Like, on the one hand, you've got professional sports leagues gearing up for their return. MLB players are expected to report to training camp in a number of days. The NHL is likely to follow after that. Major League Soccer, one of my favorite leagues, is preparing for a tournament in Florida to restart their season. The NBA is getting its bubble campus together in Orlando. The NFL is scheduled to open training camp before the end of July. All these things going on, while at the same time, positive test results are everywhere, i.e. your juxtaposition. Florida, Texas, Cali, all reported new daily records yesterday. Nationally, the U.S. reported nearly 39,000 new cases. Another record. And sports have not been immune. In fact, far from it. On the PGA Tour, for instance, Cameron Champ, as well as caddies Ricky Elliott and Ken Conboy, have tested positive since arriving in Connecticut for the Travelers Championship. Elliott caddies for Brooks Koepka, who also withdrew from the tournament, along with his brother, Chase Koepka. Conboy caddies for Graham McDowell, who withdrew as well. Webb Simpson, who won the RBC Heritage on Sunday, also pulled out. Meantime, Bob Nightingale of USA Today reported Sunday, Major League Baseball had 40 players and staff members test positive last week. The league reportedly closed all spring training facilities as a response. Furthermore, according to reports, Sacramento Kings players Buddy Hield, Jabari Parker, and Alex Len announced positive tests. Malcolm Brogdon of the Pacers tested positive. They joined two Phoenix Suns and Nikola Jokic among the NBA players who have tested positive. I mean, I could go on and on, listing each sport and the people who have tested positive in just the last week alone. But you get the point. The juxtaposition. The sobering thought. The Orlando Sentinel, for instance, reported that Disney workers are petitioning Disney World not to reopen to the public in July, which is kind of awkward.
Awkward.
Since that's where the NBA bubble is going to be. The NFL announced the Hall of Fame game would be canceled and the Hall of Fame inductions will be postponed until next year. It makes sense. I'd hate for the guys who are going into the Hall of Fame, the guys that are going into the induction, to have that postponed, but it's got to be done, right? As for the game itself, that's not the worst thing ever. This is not the first time that game has been canceled. After all, it was canceled one time because the field was terrible. Let me give you yet another example. Take the case of Ezekiel Elliott, part of that group of Cowboys and Texans players who tested positive. Elliott said yesterday in a Twitch feed that he's back to feeling, quote, normal, but he has not been cleared to work out yet. He also had this to say.
I just feel like there's a lot of moving parts that have to be figured out. I just don't know how they can keep the players healthy. You got to put the health of the players first. And it's not even so much, I would say, the players' health, because, I mean, I got corona and really didn't affect me much. But a lot of people have kids, you know, they may have kids with asthma, they may have newborn babies, their parents or grandparents may live with them. But we have to find a way just to make sure that the players and their families, and the coaches also, and their families, aren't put at risk.
You know, at the risk of offending, I've got a question. It may have taken that guy getting it to figure it out. But if that guy can figure it out, how come so many people can't? He gets it. Ezekiel Elliott knows. He nailed that. That's the truth. A lot can change in a matter of weeks. I'm no doctor. And perhaps with a concerted effort, and will, we can get this thing under control. But ignoring it is not a very good plan. The NFL has had the advantage of starting its season after all the other sports. They've been able to take a cautious approach. They haven't had to make public declarations about their plans for the impact of COVID. But all of a sudden now, we're in late June, and camps are supposed to be opening up in a matter of weeks. And if the question was, when will NFL players start to get concerned about their own safety? The answer appears to be right now. You heard Ezekiel Elliott. Now listen to Malcolm Jenkins this morning on CNN.
The NBA is a lot different than the NFL because they can actually quarantine all of their players or whoever is going to participate. We have over 2,000 players, even more coaches and staff. We can't do that. And so we end up being kind of on this trust system where the honor system, where we just have to hope that guys are social distancing and things like that. And that puts all of us at risk, not only, you know, us as players and who's in the building, but when you go home to your families. I have parents that I don't want to get sick. And I think until we get to the point where we have protocols in place and until we get to the place as a country where we feel safe doing it, we have to understand that football is a non-essential business. And so we don't need to do it. And so the risk, has to be really eliminated before I would feel comfortable with going back.
That's a strong statement right there. A really strong statement. The risk is going to have to be eliminated before he's comfortable going back. How and when are you going to do that? The money quote right there. Football is a non-essential business. And so we don't need to do it. So the risk, has to be really eliminated before I would feel comfortable with going back, end quote. Again, he's right. Unlike the NBA, the NFL cannot really be put in a bubble. There are way too many people to put on lockdown, and that honor system is going to put people at risk. Like, all you need is one person to break out for a short period of time, and things get really ugly really quickly. Have you not seen the stories about that one person or the couple of people who went to a bar one night and then came out? And then it spread again. And again, I don't want to be the guy to be a huge downer and a wet blanket and to bring people down. And it certainly is not political. Like, I want sports to happen in some form. This is a sports talk show. I have a vested interest in there being sports. Believe it or not, as easy as we make it look, it is not easy to do a 3-hour sports talk show every single day without sports. Believe me. As much as you want sports to return, believe this, I want it even more. In fact, I need it. It's how I put food on the table. It's how I put my kids in college. I want it and I need it. That said, I want everybody to be safe. And I would not be doing my job if I didn't point out the cases are rising, not falling. And there are reports of certain states being on the verge of being overwhelmed. As Ezekiel Elliott said, our new voice of reason, Ezekiel Elliott. As Zeke said, quote, "Hey, I hope we play. I want to let you guys know, I do hope that we have a season, but it has to be right. It has to. We got to put the health of the players and the coaches and the support staff first. I think that's important," end quote. My man, Ezekiel Elliott, the voice of reason. He's right, but it's not just important, it's critically important. It's vitally important. And yes, I am aware there is enormous money at stake. All right, I'm well aware of that. And I'm also aware that there's always going to be risk in playing sports during a pandemic. But there are degrees of risk that we all need to be aware of. And ignoring the risk is the greatest risk of all. Ignoring the risk is the greatest risk of all. Again, sorry to be the downer. Sorry to be real at the top of the program. Sorry to break out a big-ass word like juxtaposition at the top of the program. Austin Hooper is my guest. Austin, great to have you back. Listen, before we get into the offseason, how are you and everybody around you doing, Austin, during this really unusual time?
First of all, Jim, thanks for having me. And yeah, I mean, it's been a funky offseason, right? I mean, just you got to really adapt with what the new rules are, and those rules are constantly evolving. And it was tough to do things with more of a virtual format, but at the end of the day, that was the best option we had. So we just had to adapt and move forward with it.
Hey, listen up. When you're working from home or you're working on your fitness, you want to make sure that what you're listening to is what you're listening to and not what your roommates or neighbors or a significant other or kids are listening to. Everybody needs a great pair of wireless earbuds. But before you go dropping hundreds of bucks on a pair, make sure you check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. Now, you already know that Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market. But they sound just as amazing as the other top audio brands that you know of. Now check this. Their newest model, the Everyday E25 earbuds, are their best ones yet. 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a more compact design that gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. They're amazing. And they're so comfortable, they're perfect for conference calls or binging podcasts. All those things together, plus the price and the value, make them a game changer for me. And unlike some of the other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet. There are no dangling wires or stems to distract anybody during video calls. You've heard me talk about how the company was co-founded by Ray J and celebrities like Snoop Dogg, J.R. Smith, Melissa Etheridge. They're all obsessed with their Raycons. Pick up a pair, find out what the hype's all about. Now is the time to get the latest and the greatest from Raycon. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/Rome. Again, buyraycon.com/Rome. Get 15% off. I've got my pair. Get yours. Buyraycon.com/Rome. Yeah, so what about the process itself? I mean, the whole thing, to your point, is funky. But, like, earlier this spring, you were a free agent. What was it like to go through that during a global pandemic?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jim, it was weird, buddy. Like, trying to, you know, be a free agent. You know, there are obviously, you know, much bigger things going on a global scale. So, and being a free agent in this class, we had to sign, a coronavirus addendum agreement, basically saying if there's no season, your signing bonus will get pushed back. So I'm really hoping that there's a season, Rob.
And I hear you. Austin Hooper is joining us. Listen, I've long said, Austin, for over a year now, that Cleveland is America's team, but that's just me talking from behind a microphone. What was it about the opportunity in Cleveland that appealed to you so much?
I really liked Andrew Berry, just kind of his vision, his approach, his style. I think I could really, you know, benefit being under his leadership, and Coach Stefanski, just being on the phone with him, you know, the energy he brings, and just, like, not only that, Jim, but I mean, me coming from a, you know, my rookie year being with Shanahan in that outside zone play action scheme, I mean, that was just something, you know, that an opportunity presented itself where I could be back in a similar system that I was in 2016. So, you know, between the system, the coach, the GM, you know, and be real, the offer. So, I mean, all four of those things were lined up. So, I mean, it was kind of a no-brainer for me.
Austin Hooper joining us, and then probably the quarterback had something to do with it as well. Like,
no,
I know for a fact you've seen Baker Mayfield play in person. What was it that made you feel like that's a guy that you want to team up with?
Yeah, around my throughout, you know, before free agency began, I got a hold of Baker and just kind of, you know, chat with him on the phone, and he was just kind of like, hey, man, like, you know, last year wasn't what I wanted. You know, I'm a really competitive person. You'll find that out about me. And, you know, last year, you know, for, you know, a bunch of, you know, whatever happened, I mean, just it wasn't up to his standard. Me just talking with him on the phone for, you know, 10 minutes before free agency, something as simple as that, I just kind of got a little bit of a feel for him and what he's all about. And, you know, later once I signed, I went out to Austin, Texas for a couple of weeks and stayed with him and trained with him every day and just got to be around him and, you know, his wife and his friends, and kind of see, like, how he operates and, you know, how he really works and really lives what he talked about. So it was a great opportunity to catch and run routes with him for a couple of weeks because he's, I think he's going to be a really good player, Jim. I mean, he's got a really live arm. So I'm excited.
I do too, Austin. I definitely believe in this guy. I understand that it was not a great year last year, but nobody understands that better than him. I think I'm not there, but I trust that he's going to make the adjustments. I would still load up on stock on Baker Mayfield. I'm still all in with him. You mentioned Kevin Stefanski, Austin. For instance, everybody talks about how much he loves 12 personnel and using tight ends. From what you've seen of the offense so far, how would you describe that offense and your role in the offense?
Great question. I would say, and you want me to speak specifically more on the 12 personnel components of our offense or just schematically as a whole?
How about both?
Well, in the 12 world, I mean, having two tight ends, right, like, you immediately, defense has to declare what they're doing. And first of all, is it base or nickel? You know, you're dealing with a big guy, you're dealing with a little body. You know, using 12 personnel, it gives away. If you're in a wing set gym, like if there's a safety or linebacker over, basically, unless you see a corner, it's going to be man-to-man. You know what I mean? It's just such easy man-zone tells for literally everyone on the field. O-lineman could tell a man-zone read when you're in a wing set. Like, it just tips the hand of the defense and allows you, you know, depending on, you know, self-scout leading up to, you know, how the defense prepares against, you know, this or that. Like, you can really burn some defenses based on, you know, 12 personnel formations and having a guy like David, you know, a guy with legit 4.4 speed, like, you know, it's going to be fun to play with him, and we should pair some linebackers this year. So it's going to be fun. Overall, as an offense, right, it comes out of that outside zone play action scheme. So, you know, very similar stuff you've seen, you know, with Kyle. He got a boost, you know, three out zone stretch scheme. Everything you've seen before, Jim, just, you know, with a different play caller now.
Chopping it up with Austin Hooper. Now, Austin, another guy who played a part in your decision was former Browns tight end Jordan Cameron, who you met through American Football Without Borders. For those who do not know, what is that program about, and why did you want to get involved?
So Gary Barnidge started the foundation, I want to say, in 2014 or 2015. It was just a way where they could do camp for the kids in a different country every year. And I've been fortunate enough to be on the past couple. My first one being, after I talked to you after the Super Bowl in Atlanta, I ended up rolling out to Germany on my first one. And then this past following year, we were in Hungary, just put on a camp for kids. And this year, we always do a charity component. And this year, we worked with children affected by war. So it was some heavy stuff, Jim, just seeing, you know, how strong these kids' spirits are despite, you know, all these, you know, physical deals, you know, it's a byproduct of war that they have to deal with. So, I mean, it really gave me a whole different perspective on, you know, I'm blessed to play a child's game at 25. Like, there's, you know, there are much more pressing concerns going on in the world. And I think the foundation is just a great opportunity that allows, you know, a bunch of vets to teach kids, and we can also do some charitable things along the way. So I can go on and on about it. I'm a big fan.
And good on you. What a great cause that is. Austin Hooper is joining us. Austin, I thought you had a great line recently. Give me a minute. I want to read this. Quote, it's definitely more cool to play tight end now. I remember almost a decade ago. How long ago was when Richard Sherman was talking trash after that game? Don't open your mouth about me. I remember after that, everybody wanted to play corner. Kids of my generation in high school wanted to start playing defensive back after that, end quote. So now it's cool to be a tight end. Who do you credit for that change and why? What happened? What flipped?
Great question. I don't know. It's like more the chicken or the egg story, right? Was it Pat's success with Gronk, or was it, you know, Tony and Antonio Gates and Dallas Clark who kind of started to make it cool? But I mean, definitely in the social media age, right, it's Gronk. Gronk rules it all. I mean, his presence on social media, I mean, just, you know, the multifaceted blocking platform that is Gronk on every level. How can you not love that guy? So I think, much like you hit upon with, because I remember that championship game against Harbaugh's Niners, I was in high school, and I remember the next day, just the strangest thing, like, everyone wanted to play corner. I'm like, bro, you're a D lineman. Like, you're not playing corner. But everyone wanted to, and to your point, I do think the whole tight end movement deal where it started to become cool, definitely, in my opinion, started with Gronk, and then since then you've had my guy, you know, basically Gronk reincarnate, and then you got Travis, who's, you know, the man in his own right. So, I mean, a lot of personality. So I think those three definitely contribute nowadays towards everyone wanting to play tight end.
So much personality. Austin, one last thought. At the end of last season, you went to your second straight Pro Bowl. What was that experience like, and how good does it feel now to be a regular at the Pro Bowl?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Jim? You cut out.
I was saying that last year, Austin, you went to your second straight Pro Bowl. I'm curious, what was that experience like, and what's it feel like now to be a regular at the Pro Bowl?
It felt good, Jim, but, you know, it doesn't matter what you do. I mean, there are always going to be people who, you know, say this, that, and the third. But not only one time, but twice in back-to-back years. Like, that's just – I remember talking to you on your show a couple years back, and it was just like that all – even years ago, Jim, just all the work I put in the offseason that I don't put on Instagram for other people to look at, like – you know, all the work I do, I just, you know, count my chips quietly and work on my craft quietly. So the ability to be able to be a part of that exclusive fraternity back-to-back years is just a testament to all the work I put in.
What a great line that is. I count my chips quietly. Austin, one thing to quickly follow up. I had Eric Weddle on my podcast, and he said to me, without giving away the podcast because it's live right now, but he made the point to me that right around his third or fourth year, he figured something out. He figured out, and this is to the point that you just made, that, yeah, you go to the Pro Bowl, but that's not going to stop people from saying what they say. Weddle said, as soon as I figured out that the only thing that mattered were those who were in my tight circle, that I couldn't control and I didn't care what people said about me, then everything flipped, everything changed. Is there something to that?
No, I mean, you're absolutely right, Jim. There's some truth to that, and I think I need to adopt that more into my life. I mean, you're so right. I mean, the Pro Bowl is voted on by your peers. Like, if you get respect by your peers, that's the, you know, as an athlete, I mean, that as long as I get respect to my peers, like, I'm good in my book. I don't care what John from Milwaukee's got to say, you know what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. I got a few John Milwaukee's myself.
Yeah, Twitter account, yeah. So if you get respect from your peers, just like you're respecting your business, you get respect from your peers, I'm sure has to feel more, probably has to feel better than to you than like fans coming up to you, like people in your industry who know all the work you put in over decades and seeing where you're at. I mean, it's just like, hey, I'm just, yeah, if you get respect from your peers, that's when you know you made it.
He is a two-time Pro Bowler, coming off a huge year, 75 receptions last year in just 13 games, led all tight ends in catch percentage over the last 3 years, and now with a great opportunity. My man, Austin, so good to get caught up. You know, I appreciate you. I appreciate the relationship, and it's great to have you back on the show, Austin. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. You're the man, Jim. Hit me up whenever you need me.
I will, later, man. Austin Eckler is my guest. Austin, great to have you back. Before we get into everything, how are you and everybody around you during this most unusual time, Austin?
Hey, first off, I want to say thanks for having me. Thanks for that introduction. I like the come-in song as well. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, man. Appreciate
it. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it's been a struggle for sure, just trying to find a new routine, especially with, you know, season getting closer to, I guess, when we're supposed to start, but still not really knowing if it's going to be a possibility yet. So there's a lot of uncertainty right now. So kind of just continue to train, try to find a routine that allows you to stay ready so when we are called upon, you know, we can go out and perform. I think that's just the biggest thing right now, is trying to, you know, stay safe but also stay in shape at the same time.
Austin Eckler is my guest. All right, so what about that? In terms of training, you're a legend for your work in the weight room. So what has the offseason been like in terms of you not having your normal, usual access to facilities and gyms and team activities? What kind of workouts have you done to stay in shape?
All right, so I've kind of had my routine go all over the place. I like to switch it up as far as my workouts. So I did some at-home workouts and some, like, park workouts, like on, like, just pull-up bars and, like, push-ups and things like that for a while. But I can only do that for so long until my body starts to really feel just a need for bigger weights and something to, you know, put on my back. So luckily the NFL, you know, we got a stipend for some equipment. So I got my little at-home gym workout set up going and been able to push weight through that and run in the park because all the fields are shut down right now. So any bit of grass or straight street, I guess, is what I've been using. I've done some sprints in the street. It's come to that when it was really bad, when we were really locked down. But everything's starting to loosen up now, so starting to get into some of the gyms that I was going to before quarantine and just kind of seeing some type of normal routine getting back together. And so at least I'm able to stay in shape, and I was just kind of waiting for the green light for the season.
Chargers running back Austin Eckler is my guest. Now, listen, one of the things you've done also during this time is start a company, Gridiron Gaming Group. What is that business about, and what was the inspiration behind that business?
Hey, I appreciate you bringing that up. That's awesome. So Gridiron Gaming Group was inspired by just the lack of new, basically, content coming from athletes right now. And I'm basically in the trial stage of it, using myself as an example. I'm streaming on Twitch. And, you know, people think of Twitch as like a game streaming platform, but I've kind of turned it into just whatever I feel like streaming, whether it be like I did a 30-day workout challenge on there. I've done video games, of course. I've done giveaways. I get on there and just do like motivational talk and talk about life. And so I've just kind of tried to create a platform to keep, you know, the fan base engaged, or whoever, that doesn't have to be fans, whoever just wants to stop by and kind of hang out and get some face-to-face, not necessarily face-to-face, but like the best interaction we can get right now without any new content coming out for sports. So I would like to, further on, if proof of concept works with me, you know, bring on other athletes into the platform and basically share our community together and start up a community that way. But that's the motive behind that. And so it's been going well so far. So I appreciate it, yeah.
Just smart. Content is king. Austin Eckler, especially at this time when there's not as much content. Austin Eckler is my guest. You know, as I mentioned off the top, back in March, he signed that extension with the team. Before we get into the contract and what it represents, if we were to go back, because your story is so amazing, there's a photo of you before you made the team when you were still number three. Like, when you yourself look at that photo now, what kind of thoughts do you have and what were your goals at that point?
Yeah, referring to a photo I posted yesterday. It's funny because one of my best friends, he was out here after OTAs, and he's like, man, like, I took this photo of you 3 years ago. And that was, yeah, before I made the team. Like you said, I was still number three, which you can't even wear as a running back. You know, and I look at that picture, and I'm just like, it just, I don't even know. Everything just seemed to play its course, and I just seemed to, you know, take advantage of every opportunity that was in front of me. And, you know, it seems almost surreal, and it doesn't even seem like that's the same person. Like, it's the same person, but it's, like, in my mindset then, it was just, like, make the team. And now, since I've signed my new contract, now it's, like, how can I help myself but also make my teammates better around me? So I think it's gone from kind of a selfish, more selfish, make the team perspective to now more selfless, okay, let's make the team better. So it's been a journey, like you said. You know, started out mainly special teams and kind of worked my way into an offensive role, and then eventually, you know, took over the running back offensive role going into this next year. So I'm excited to see what comes of it, and hopefully we can get something going on the field soon.
Hey, let me ask you something else. I mean, if that's weird, if it was weird that picture was taken only a few years back before you made the team and you were number three on the depth chart, what about the fact that when you come out of high school, and you and I have talked about this, but you were putting up enormous numbers in high school, and yet one Division I school after another passed on you. When you finally get to college, there were eight other running backs. Eight on the depth chart when you got to college. And then you feel like there's a huge obstacle to overcome, and yet in your first game as a freshman, you end up starting. Like, what was your mindset then? How did you approach that first year at college?
You know, I feel like my mindset's been the same. That's what's allowed me just to keep overcoming, you know, either depth charts or just opportunities that are presented. I feel like it's just, you know, I don't compare myself to anybody. It's be the best that I can be with what tools that the coaches are giving me. And, you know, I feel like I just put myself in a position where I just make that my highest priority is, okay, be the best and the most consistent that I can be. And I just become obsessed with it. And I think you have to have that obsession with whatever you're in if you really want it. And I think that's what I've done. And, you know, I did that in college. And then I was ninth on the depth chart coming in and ended up starting all 4 years I was there. And then even coming into the Chargers, I was sixth on the depth chart here, and it took a little bit longer because it's the NFL. It's a little bit harder, but, you know, now I find myself in the same position, you know, sitting first on the depth chart. So it's just, you know, grow and grow, and just be obsessed with what you're in. And once you do that and you immerse yourself in it, you know, you see yourself having these little successes, and they start building up and snowballing.
Like, it creates its own momentum because you give yourself over to the process, and then it's like, it's not, is it a grind or is it just something that feels natural, and does it start to kind of feed upon itself? You know what I mean? Like, how much actual hard effort is there as opposed to you being swept up in the momentum of the process and the flow?
Right. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's a grind. Like, life itself is a grind, but once you immerse yourself, like I said, it becomes your lifestyle and it just becomes normal to you. Like, I'm used to, you know, working out in the morning and then running in the afternoon and then, you know, making sure I'm staying on my diet and watching film. Like, it just becomes your life. And so it doesn't necessarily be like it's not a grind because I enjoy it at the same time. So it's like, just kind of like, it feels like a hobby, but it's also my job at the same time. And it's also, you know, what I use to, you know, create and, you know, create this platform and help other people. It's hard to say that it's a grind because I enjoy it so much. It definitely is not easy. But that's life in general, like I said. And so it just becomes your lifestyle. Some people would say maybe that's not healthy, but you know, that's what it's come to be for me.
I was going to say it's a lifestyle. You said it right before I could. It's a lifestyle, and it seems to me nobody's ever accomplished anything great without that kind of commitment, without that kind of obsession. I mean, all the all-time greats would tell you the same thing. And then you got to be really creative and really innovative as well. Like, you were not invited to the combine. For those who do not know, what did you do for a pro day?
Yeah, so funny thing about my pro day, I cannot do it at my own school, at my own university, because there's too much snow on the field.
Wow.
Because my university is at 7,000, like 700 feet, the highest university in the nation. And so there's our spring season is pushed way back, so that's when the combine and everything is. So I had to go and try to get into a different pro day, which is at CU, and CU Boulder, Colorado Boulder. And they had their pro day first, and then they have like add-ons at the end, which are just people in the region that, you know, can go and they can participate in whatever the scouts basically allow them to. So for our instance was they let people run, jump, and then they cut. There's about 20 of us. They cut us all down to two people, and it was me and I think some other DB, and we were allowed to do drills and other drills like that. But yeah, it was pretty cutthroat out there because they were trying to get out of there. So that's what I ended up doing my pro day, and did pretty well at my pro day, which was kind of a big step for me because people were like, you know, why is this kid D2? Like, what, like, is he not smart? You know, is he not fast? Like, what, there's got to be something, right? And it was just like, that was my chance to just prove, like, no, I have the physical attributes and the knowledge to, you know, play at this level.
Austin Eckler joining us. What an amazing story. Now, you recently posted a video from inside the team's new stadium. How would you describe what you saw, and how eager are you to play in that new house?
Oh, my goodness. if you don't have to be a football fan, just to go and just see the creation that is happening in Inglewood is absolutely phenomenal. It's an experience in itself, I'll say that. Just being around what they've been able to create, just with the stadium, and even they're creating a lake outside. They have like an amphitheater, so it's not just for football. It's for other, you know, entertainment events as well. And it's honestly top of the notch, everything. I walk through there and I'm just like, this is as futuristic of a building as I can get. And it's also my home stadium and a football field. And it's just literally an experience in itself. It's not even finished there. And I was just in awe, just pulling up to it, seeing it from the outside too. I was just getting, you know, some just gut feelings of just like, oh, I'm ready to play. And then walking down on the field was, you know, one of those moments where you just like, man, I just missed this so much. Just a little reminder of, you know, why you enjoy and love doing this so much.
Man, that's the truth.
I can't wait.
Chargers running back Austin Eckler joining me for another moment or so. Now, Austin, you play with Philip Rivers ever since you arrived with the Chargers. You know it's a business, and I'm curious, what was it like to see him leave? Knowing that it's a business, what was it still like to see him leave, and what was it like, what do you think it's going to be like playing without him?
Like you said, it is a business, so, you know, eventually he was going to be filtered out, like all of us will be. But, you know, Philip, he was so important in my career, especially as a young player, just because he was the chief on the field and he just understood the game so well, and he knew how he wanted it to be played, and he could put everyone in a spot to succeed, or at least know what they're doing and have an opportunity, and that's all I needed. You know, he'd be like, okay, even if you knew what your job was, he'd remind you anyways, just so he knows. It's like he's reminding himself or reminding you. And that helped as a young player because there's so much going on. You know, it wasn't always clear for me. But when I got on the field with Philip, he just made it so much easier so I could just focus on playing football. So I'm definitely sad to see him leave just because, like you said, I've been here 3 years with him as my quarterback. So, you know, that's a major change. And without him, you know, I think we'll have a new dynamic because we just have different types of quarterbacks. You know, Philip was kind of like a schematical guy who's going to protect himself with, you know, either changing the play or changing the protection and just understanding everything. And now, you know, we have some more mobile quarterbacks that, you know, it won't necessarily mean they are not as smart as him, but they just don't have, you know, that experience and that starting time that Philip had. So, you know, I feel like we'll still have a great opportunity to have success, but I feel like it's going to look different than, you know, with Philip in there. You know, it might not be as, okay, if the pocket collapses, you know, it might have a little bit more of a chance to get it out. But, you know, it might not be in the best position like Philip would have got us in, but you know, you can't dwell on that. You got to move forward and try to make it work.
He has made the most of the opportunities. What an amazing journey this is. Over 1,500 yards from scrimmage, 11 touchdowns last season. He signed the extension with the team in March. He's got a new company, Gridiron Gaming Group, where he is pushing out content. Austin Eckler about all the right stuff. Austin, great to have you back. Really, really appreciate you. And it's always good to talk to you, man. I love that energy. Always gets me hyped up. Great to have you back.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you.
By hosting my radio show, I've learned one thing, if one thing only. There's not one single thing that we can all agree on, except for maybe this. Breakfast cereal rules. Am I right? Especially growing up, like cereal was one of the best parts about being a kid. Except as you grow up, you start to realize, man, maybe it's not the best thing. It was when I was a kid, but not anymore, because now I know that cereal is good because it's loaded with sugar and junk that I should not be pounding. Like many of you, I've tried to cut down on carbs and sugar and unhealthy grub. I mean, like I know now, I can't just eat what I want when I want. Which brings me back to Magic Spoon. Magic Spoon is what I want and what I need. Check these numbers out. Zero sugar, 12 grams of protein, only 3 net grams of carbs in each serving. Check out these 4 flavors. Cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry. All of it is amazing. In fact, it tastes too good to be true. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free. In other words, all the good stuff. I love it. Myself, I've been hammering the frosted. That's my go-to, and then blueberry. Speaking of go-to, go to magicspoon.com/Rome. Grab a variety pack, try it for yourself. Be sure to use our promo code Rome at checkout to get free shipping. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it is backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, and you will, but if you don't, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Magicspoon.com/Rome. Use the code Rome for free shipping. Magicspoon.com/Rome. I am pumped that Magic Spoon is a part of this podcast. Ben Golliver is my guest. Ben, it's good to have you back. How are you, Ben?
I'm doing well, Jim. Healthy, happy, and I hope the same for you.
Definitely the same for me, and I appreciate it. Good to have you back. Now, Ben, as you've written, the number of new COVID cases in Florida on Saturday was 4,000. That's more than 5 times the case count when the NBA announced it would be going to Orlando. So when you consider, Ben, the spike in the positive tests in Florida, what kind of thoughts do you have about the players gathering there in the coming weeks?
Well, bad news, Jim. It just passed 5,000 yesterday. So it just gets worse and worse by the day, it seems like. That's the real concern for me, is just not knowing where this thing is going. Of course, if you were the NBA and you could rewind time and you knew, you know, that it would be 4,000 or 5,000 at this point, you might do things differently. You might not want to bring 22 teams. You might not want to play that thing in Disney World in Florida. You might want to pick a different location. I mean, you would just kind of change your entire thought process. But when the NBA selected Disney World, you know, going back a month ago, you know, Florida was in a pretty manageable position. You know, New York and New Jersey were probably the hot spots in the country, and everything seemed like it was lining up pretty well. Then the NBA goes about it and creates this document, 113 pages of health and safety protocols for that bubble that they want to build in Florida. And pretty much everything in that document, Jim, is about what happened inside the bubble. It doesn't have to do anything with what's outside the bubble. And so now you're in a situation where a lot of their planning efforts have gone into trying to keep the players safe, and yet you're going to have Disney employees going in and out of the bubble as they work. You know, potentially if a player leaves the bubble just to blow off some steam or whatever, he's going to be at a much higher risk now because the cases there in Orlando have just gotten so prevalent. It's a pretty scary situation. And you top, you know, put on top of that, they want to have media come down here, and you know, other people are going to be having access to this situation. It's a lot of people to put in that bubble, almost 400 players, hundreds of other additional staff members. And to me, you look at the situations, whether it's pro sports, the NFL, the NHL, college football, women's soccer, all of those, Major League Baseball, all of those have been affected with positive tests so far in Florida in just the last week. It just seems like a really, really scary situation.
It's a really comprehensive response. Ben Golliver is joining us. You know, Ben, to your point, it's not really a true bubble. Not when Disney employees were allowed or will be allowed to come and go. There's not an explicit statement that the NBA players will be banned if they do leave. How much does it matter what is happening outside the bubble?
Well, it matters a lot because, like you're saying, it's not just about the Disney employees, it's the players too. And what we saw with the case of the women's soccer players, and they just want to go out and have a beer at a bar, right? Even if they're socially distanced, they think they're doing things right. The bars are open in Orlando. You know, it's a common thing you would expect players to want to do, you know, whether it's team bonding or just blowing off steam. and then you wind up and have an outbreak and six or seven of those players test positive, and now they have to withdraw from their women's soccer tournament. They can't even participate because they don't have enough healthy players. Something like that could easily happen. And we're talking about 375 players going down there in a high-stress environment in the playoffs. Everybody's going to be watching these games, millions watching on television. If you have a bad night, what's your, common response? Oh, let's just go, blow off some steam, try to forget about it. They're not going to necessarily have that situation. They're going to be confined to the hotels for a large part. All it takes is one guy to go out and defy the rules, potentially, get exposed, come back in, infect his teammates, infect his opponents, and this thing takes off with inside the bubble. So those risks are very real. They've been something that the NBA has considered all along. But again, it goes back to the idea of the rising case counts in Florida. Those risks might have been, one number a month ago, and now they're four, five, six times greater at this point. It's just a significantly different situation.
Ben, for instance, what if that did happen? What if that did happen to an NBA team? What if all of a sudden you had two or three or four players that are infected on that same team? Is there a point where the league might shut down or suspend the restart, or is it going to go through no matter what, come hell or high water?
Well, their current plan is that if a player tests positive, that they'll keep the playoffs going. That's what they hope for. But of course, if you reach a critical mass where, say, half a team tests positive, that team basically would have to forfeit, right? You'd have no other way around it, or you'd have to delay the schedule. And that goes back to how they structured this thing. Remember, Jim, they brought 22 teams rather than just the 16 playoff teams, and they're spreading this thing all the way out through October. I mean, it's almost a three-month commitment for the teams that are going to be there until the end. That's a lot of moving parts. If you have a whole team test positive halfway through the middle of it, you can't exactly say, oh, we're just going to shut down for two or three weeks and still stay on that tight schedule. Now it gets to be even more complicated. So they've kind of boxed themselves into a corner here where they don't have a lot of wiggle room in the schedule. They probably have to go for it if there's positive tests. And really they're just left hoping that there's no major outbreak that kind of undercuts the competitive issues that we expect from sports. I mean, bottom line, if we go into the finals and one of those teams doesn't have half their players because they're sick, no one's going to view the other team as the legitimate champions, right? They're going to say, oh, it's the ultimate asterisk. They just played against half of their opponents because those guys were sick. And ultimately, the credibility here really matters, not only for crowning the champion, but also for perception of the league. If they get down there and players are testing positive left and right inside the bubble, other guys are getting scared for their safety, or God forbid someone gets seriously ill or dies, it's going to be a completely different situation for the NBA that could have long-lasting damage to their reputation.
Ben Golver joining us. I mean, so many interesting points in that, Ben. Like, for instance, to that point, in crowning a champion, if, for instance, the league were to make it all the way through and a team does win the NBA Finals, do you have any idea what that moment would be like? For instance, do you think there's going to be a celebration, or do you think there might be absolutely nothing?
Well, you're asking me, Jim, is if instead of handing out those baseball hats, they're going to hand out masks, or they're going to... Maybe they're handing out the champagne bottles. They're saying, hey, guys, don't dump it on each other's head. Make sure you're spraying from 6 feet away. I mean, look, everything is going to have to be different. You look at some of the rules they've put in place. They don't want players messing with their mouth guards during games. They don't want guys licking their hands and touching the ball. They don't want guys doing the jersey swaps because, obviously, that's bringing you into close contact with your opponents. I mean, they're trying to legislate some of this stuff out of the game just for the protection and the safety of the players. I mean, even on the bench, they want, the back row bench players who aren't active in the game, they want those guys wearing masks, and same deal with coaches who are on the second bench, for each team. So they're going to be trying to take precautions. But yeah, if you're in an empty gym and you win the NBA title, I imagine it's a big feeling of relief. I think there would be a celebration because it would sort of be like the last man standing type of situation. But still, it wouldn't be like it normally is where you get to play to the crowd. It wouldn't have that same jubilation, I would imagine. And possibly these guys are saying, thank God it's over. Can we please get out of here? Can we fly home and go back to our family?
You know, Ben, when you lay it out like that, I would say that if you win, it might be harder to win under those circumstances. You've got nothing to apologize for. You know, assuming then, and once we've covered all of this now, what about the matchups themselves? Like earlier this week, Avery Bradley announced that he was not going to participate. How big of a loss is that for the Lakers if he's not going to go to Florida?
Yeah, no, it's a big loss for sure, and you hate to even talk about the basketball implications because he's staying home because his son is basically at a higher risk, and
right.
He doesn't want to like put his family or separate his family or put his son in a situation where he could get sick. And you completely respect that player's decision. We've seen a few other guys do that. I would say big picture, Jim, we haven't seen any superstar level guys, you know, like the big, you know, top 25 level players say they're not going to play, other than a Kevin Durant or a Kyrie Irving, who we already assumed were going to play. So I think from that standpoint, the NBA is kind of exhaling, because we saw lots of guys discuss the option of, you know, would it be a distraction to play from the social justice movements? We saw other guys with health concerns. So it seems like this week, pretty much everyone's reported, and I think that's good news for the NBA in terms of their planning. But for the Lakers specifically, you know, their depth, you know, they're a superstar-laden team with LeBron and Anthony Davis. All those other pieces help. Avery Bradley is a key perimeter defensive player. If you have to go through Houston with James Harden, Russell Westbrook, if you have to go through the Clippers, you know, with their perimeter talent, you could really use an Avery Bradley. And there's not going to be a great option to try to replace what he does. I know people are talking about J.R. Smith. That's just a completely different type of player. He's not this defensive lockdown guy. You know, he's not. You know, he's more interested in hitting threes and getting buckets. And that's not exactly what the Lakers need.
Right. Ben Golver joining us. Ben, one more guy who's not necessarily that top 25 guy, but a really critical player, is Lou Williams. And apparently he's still thinking about whether or not he wants to play. How much would that shake things up in the West if he decides to sit out?
No, that's a big one, too, because if we're saying who are the contenders right now, to me it's still the Bucks, the Lakers, and the Clippers. That's your top tier of teams, and you're seeing a guy like Patrick Beverley. I love this, Jim. He's just talking trash almost nonstop. He doesn't want to hear any excuses. He's saying, let's just check ball and go play basketball. And, you know, I love that mentality, but you know, there's going to be some guys who, you know, are just weighing quality of life issues. Do they want to be away from their families for that long? You know, do they want to be stuck in a hotel room for 3 months? And all those kinds of questions. You know, we haven't heard one way or the other definitively for Lou Williams, but I do think it goes back to what the Clippers did at the deadline. I mean, people might have forgotten, you know, they went out and grabbed a Reggie Jackson. You know, they went out and made some other minor moves around the edges, you know, getting a Joakim Noah to kind of fill out their rotation. Those kinds of moves could really come back and help them, because Reggie Jackson can pick up some of the ball handling. He could pick up some of the pick and roll stuff. So that was, you know, it could be kind of a blessing in disguise, the type of move that we sweep under the rug when it happens. But maybe a few months later, it pays dividends.
Hey, Ben, what about, we're talking about contenders, so on terms of the Lakers, what about Dwight Howard? I mean, he's been so valuable for them this season. If he decides not to play, what would that mean to them?
No, it's really tricky because, you know, I mentioned Joakim Noah going to the Clippers. Now, all of a sudden, you know, that was a guy the Lakers had looked at previously, so he would be off the table. DeMarcus Cousins has been injured, and, you know, he'd be trying to rush back into this environment. To me, if I was him or his agent, I would say, hey, just stay home and recuperate, right? So that leaves the Lakers potentially with a hole in the middle if Dwight doesn't play. We're still waiting to hear word on him as well. But if you lost both Avery Bradley and Dwight Howard, I mean, that would be, you know, massive hits to a rotation that had just really come into a nice place before the shutdown. They had great chemistry all season long. Everybody had bought into their roles. Dwight Howard was at the top of that list. I mean, I never saw it coming. I thought it was going to be a questionable fit there. And he had enjoyed a really nice year, but you know, I understand he had some people close to him, or at least one person close to him, passed away here over the last couple of months. I mean, that could be weighing on his mind as well, and I'm sure he has family obligations too. So you never want to judge these guys for sitting out, but there are implications on the championship chase for sure.
Hey, Ben, one more guy. What about the case of Davis Bertans and him not playing for the Wizards? What do you make of that decision, and how do you think that's going to play with his teammates?
I thought there was going to be a lot more Davis Bertans, Jim, because, look, I mean, ultimately he's going into a situation with the Wizards where they have a very small percentage chance of even making the playoffs. So they're essentially signing up to play 8 games that are probably going to be largely meaningless. He's heading into free agency about to get a big payday. Anything he does in Orlando, if he gets injured or any other thing that happens to him, all that does is take money out of his pocket. So I thought there was going to be a lot of players who are in kind of that similar situation, who are saying, look, it's in my financial best interest to not play because I don't want to compromise my next contract. So far, he's really the first guy that we've seen do that. But, you know, I think it's a wise and shrewd business decision. If he were to suffer a major injury there, that could cost him tens of millions of dollars. You know, it's kind of a weak free agency crop this year, Jim. His name was actually, even though he's not that well-known of a player, he's towards the top of the list in terms of guys who are really going to cash in and get paid. And so I think he's kind of smart to play defense here. And really, what's the point? I mean, if you're going down there to play 8 games, let's say you lose your first 2 games, you might be eliminated from the playoffs already. And so what was the point of going to this bubble for more than a month? I just don't get it. Personally, if I was the NBA, I wouldn't have even brought the Washington Wizards or some of these other teams. I would have just kept it to the 16 playoff teams, and that way you wouldn't have even put these guys in that position in the first place.
Agreed, Ben. One last thought. It's impossible to predict who's going to win a resumed season because we've never seen anything like this, right? But as we get closer and know that we have a better idea of what life is going to be like in that bubble, what type of team do you think would be best equipped to win?
Well, first of all, I'm going to be real cynical here. I think this basketball is going to be ugly, Jim. You know, you're throwing these guys, after months off, you know, trying to get them back into a situation where they have a couple weeks of training camp to get right. They're going to be worried about their health, and rightfully so. They're probably going to have one eye on the social justice protest, and rightfully so. To me, I think you've got to have a team that can win ugly, right? That can really play defense at an elite level, that can lock down opposing stars. And so that's why I would still favor the Clippers. You know, I think that they were coming together nicely. You've got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard with some more rest and recuperation time, which I think benefits them. You've got basically an entirely veteran rotation from, Montrezl Harrell, Patrick Beverley. The list goes on and on. They're really deep, which I think will help in the case of any injury issues that pop up along the way. And then they're motivated. They've never done it before as an organization. Kawhi has, but these other guys haven't. I think everything is just sort of like lining up properly for them. We'll see if it plays out that way. Like you said, it's impossible to know. It's going to be very unpredictable. One team to keep an eye on, though, it would actually be the Toronto Raptors. You know, their coach, Nick Nurse, he's coached everywhere. You know, if you can coach in Great Britain, you know, going down to Orlando and playing in front of no fans, that's not going to throw you off at all. You're going to be just fine. He's very smart and adaptable with his game plans. They have a lot of veteran competitive players, guys like Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka. Have had some time to rest and recuperate before a playoff push, which is helpful. And they've got great chemistry because they played together all of last season, winning the title. Granted, they don't have Kawhi, but they still got a lot of talent on hand. That's sort of like one sleeper team that I actually kind of like potentially to win in Orlando more than I did if we just had the normal playoffs.
That is as good as it gets. That is a great, great NBA conversation. He is a national NBA writer for the Washington Post, host of Greatest of All Talk, an NBA show, host of Open Floor Podcast, Ben Golliver. Ben, great job. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, Jim. Take care.
Go to BC. Jeff in BC. You made it in, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well, mate. Got a question for you. I was bumping up and down the 8 back in about 95, 96, and you had a take about, I thought it was Dr. Beaudoin. I checked in with Stevie H at Stucknut. Apparently it was Dr. Boudreau. Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't that the original crank call back in about 95, 96? Tom Tolbert was going on about cranks in faces. And I said, I'm not certain, but think back. Wasn't the Tom Tolbert interview the original crank call?
You make a point now, Jeff. All right, so what he's talking about is yesterday was the 15-year anniversary of Toby in Houston. Arguably the most infamous call in Jungle history. And if it's the most infamous call in Jungle history, then it's arguably the most infamous call in sports talk history. I could even argue that it might be the most infamous call in talk radio history. We ran that down. Toby in Houston. You all know that call where Toby in Houston was in a gym or a club and in the locker room and getting dressed, and there was Larry Brown. And then we know what happened next. Jeff in BC right there said, wait a minute. That's not the original crank call. Is the original crank call not Tom Tolbert talking about a crank and somebody's face?
Right in my face.
Well, let's see. And he mentioned Dr. Boudreau. What is the history and the legend of Boudreau? Let's go back and check the call.
What do they tell you? I mean, any of those horror stories, do they show you the videotape? I mean, how do they get you early on and say, hey, look, you don't want to do this or else?
Well, they always bring in the FBI early on in the season. These are like two guys that roll up in suits and tell you, look, if there's any shady characters rolling around, let us know. If anybody comes up to you and asks, are there any injuries on the team? Is anybody sick? Blah, blah, blah. But this one story, this was mortifying. I mean, you're sitting there, right? I was like, how old was I? Like 19, 20 years old. First big university I'm playing in. So I'm kind of taking this stuff seriously. Like, like for about 5 minutes and I dismiss it and go make my bets. I was telling the FBI guy, can you hurry up? The game's starting at 3 o'clock, okay? I need to get out of here. I need to get down. So anyways, awesome. He's telling me a story of this guy named Dr. Boudreaux. Dr. Boudreaux, right? I don't know where the guy comes from. It sounded like an urban myth to me, but this guy gives me this story. They showed us pictures of him. Like, stay away from this dude, like, at all costs. This guy's dangerous. So we're, like, sitting there listening to stories.
Dr. Boudreaux's
exploits. And what this guy would do is he would hang out with basketball players or football players, like college players, get to know them a little bit, take them out for a couple beers. He'd, like, slip them a Mickey. Then he would bring them back to their hotel room, right? Back to their hotel room. They'd be passed out. They would wake up in the morning with, like, Polaroids of him standing over him with, like, his crank in their face and blackmail him. Absolutely incredible. I mean, this guy would just... And then he'd basically just say, listen, Buck, I want money, I want this, I'll be your agent, Buck, I'll be whatever you want. And the guys were just like, all right.
With all due respect to the family-oriented listeners up and down the West Coast across America, tell me you did not just say he would stand over with a Polaroid with crank in their face.
Wow. All right, so I've heard that several dozen times over the course of my life. I'm not sure that's ever hit me quite like that. To give you some background, that's Tom Tolbert. And I think for that exchange alone, I'm almost willing to take my Hall of Fame plaque off of my shelf and give it to Tolbert. Tom Tolbert was talking, that was 1998. So if memory serves, that was at the Final Four, probably. You could tell that was a remote location. Maybe not. Maybe that was an event. Maybe that was a station visit. I don't really know. Tom Tolbert was talking about his time at Arizona. He said that was my first big university gig because he also played at UC Irvine. So he was talking about the, quote, FBI coming in to give a lecture to the players. Be careful of this. Be careful of that. And be careful of this guy in particular. And Tolbert said, yeah, Can you hurry up? I need to get down. I want to bet. So that's Jeff in BC saying, now, wait a minute. Toby is getting a lot of credit for the crank call, but didn't Tom Tolbert make the original crank call?
Good night,